This is a Clock Shelves Podcast Network production.
And welcome to another episode of MCU and Me. As always, I am Paul Casey, and I'm joined once again by two great guys to talk Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with. Go ahead and reintroduce yourselves, guys.
Powerhouse of Podcasting, Kevin Zane, back at it again.
Ellsworth Tallman, I don't have quite as cool of a tagline, but I'll get you one.
We're working on it.
Welcome back to the show, guys. We are once again, as I said, covering Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this time episodes 4 through 6. And Ellsworth, I'm going to kick it to you first. We kind of talked briefly beforehand, but let everybody know. So you mentioned last time this is the first time you're watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. How far now are you since the last time we recorded?
I don't even know how many episodes. I'm like episode 9. Was that about a third to almost halfway through the first season? I don't know how many episodes there are. Was there like 20?
I believe it was a standard 22.
Okay. So yeah. I'm about a third of the way there through the first season.
All right. So not too far past where we're at this point. So no, that should be good.
Not too far.
So, okay. Again, this is more just kind of a general discussion. We're not necessarily doing, you know, like a point-by-point breakdown. We've learned a little more about the characters by this point. We've seen some more tech and stuff like that. What do we think about these three episodes? The three episodes in question being I Spy, Girl in the Flower Dress, and I don't know if it's FZZT or FZZT or what, but yeah, because on Wikipedia, it lists it as FZZT, which is presumably because of the electronic or electric whatever, but on Netflix, it lists it as F.Z.Z.T, and I'm like, I don't think that's right.
Yeah, I'm going with FZZT. And let me just say, just watching these first 6 episodes as we have now, and I didn't really intend to. I knew you were going to be reviewing them. You asked me to be on. I'm more than happy to do it, obviously, always. But watching these first 6 episodes really reminded me of how and why I became so enamored with this show in the first place. I didn't expect to go back and watch and like and enjoy them as much as I have. Do I enjoy them so much to start doing a full rewatch? I don't know about that, but I have loved pretty much every second of the show so far that we've watched.
I would agree. I've also not watched this since the very first time watching it through. And I kind of mentioned it very briefly. And again, we're not giving too many spoilers because if there's anybody else out there like Ellsworth, who's just kind of watching this for the first time, but there was a lot similar to those first three. There was a lot where I didn't remember that certain things happened so early on, you know, and we got, as we talked about last time, we're still slowly building up who these characters are. We're getting some mysteries, the, you know, questions still about Coulson are being asked, and we're learning a bit more about Sky. We get more of the Centipede Extremis, project sort of thing going on. And like I said, I know, a lot of people, I don't want to necessarily cover as much, you know, too much ground like we did on the last one, but a lot of people that we know kind of said they gave up after a few episodes because it started out slow. And maybe it's just because of the binging versus week to week, but I don't necessarily think these are slow. I don't know how many episodes you guys or anybody else tend to give something. I try to give something 3 to 4 episodes, but I feel like just kind of Maybe it was the binge aspect of it, I'll admit. But watching these first 6, I don't quite see how people can say that this show started out too slow.
I will say, as someone watching it the first time, it does have It does have a little slowness to it. I will disagree just a little bit, but that's just me. I don't know what it is. Maybe my attention span's a little shorter than the average person, and I'm looking for a little bit more something to stimulate me. The mystery part of it is what I love mysteries. So mystery part of it is, like, I love that we got a little bit more Coulson background with this, the first, the episode 4, you know, that we learned some more about his background and another agent and some stuff that he carries weight, which adds to the character, which from 4 to 5, we do start to pick up speed. I do believe that now there is some speed being picked up because we get a little bit more development. By 6, we're really picking up speed because now Fitz and Simmons are actually getting a little bit more play, and we're getting to see what kind of characters they're going to be.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that part of episode 6 where we really don't focus on Sky as much. Sky's kind of barely there in episode 6 where we focus on Fitzsimmons. Overall, I'd say, like, the overall main storylines obviously has been kind of slow and steady. You get a little piece of information each week. I don't think the episodes themselves have been slow. Like, I think as far as what they present to you each week has been fine. Obviously, whatever they're trying to build up to has been slow because they kind of put it on the back burner until maybe the last few minutes of the episode. Then they'll drop in a little something adding to what has been going on each time.
It's like they're teasing and they don't want to go full throttle yet with anything. I feel like they're building up the story, but at the same time, I feel like they haven't fully decided on full throttling some of the backstories. But I'm still intrigued. You know, we get, you know, now we have an organization that's, you know, picking up, you know, agents and putting eyeballs in them that make them do things, and we find out that they're being led by other people who are being held at the same kind of issue, which is, yeah, cool.
It's kind of like building piece by piece. You know, you got the eyeball, and then you have Project Extremis, and then they get the platelets from Scorch, you know, and if they just were to put that all together.
Now we're on to something.
Yeah.
Oh, and can we side note and just say that Ward really, really looked like Clark Kent, like a motherfucker, rocking those glasses. Like, can I just take a moment to say that? I was like, oh, shit, man, we might have a new Superman.
And then by the end of episode 6, he's flying through the sky.
Right? I did notice that, though. But no, and then, you know, the 5th episode, was it the 5th one? Or is it the 6th one?
Girl in the Flower Dress? Or...
The 6th one where, yeah, it's the one we see Coulson's definitely carrying something more because he's talking to the firefighter when he has that moment about dying. Like, he gets real right there. Like,
I really like that too. That was by far the most emotional moment of the series so far. And I really like that. There was lots of drama in that episode between, you know, Simmons being infected and having to go into quarantine and then having to find a cure, not via a vaccine, but via an anti-serum. You think less or more people would freak out if he called it an anti-serum.
Right.
Some of this was very, very relative to what's going on in the world today with Agent Blake, you know, looking to shut down the possibility of a pandemic.
True.
Yeah, it was very, very kind of on the nose to where we are at the time of recording.
Yeah, here in May 2020.
That's crazy.
I have to say that fizzed episode, again, not that we haven't, because like we said last time, sort of the Extremis thing is, you know, obviously a tie-in with Iron Man 3, which came out earlier in that year and stuff like that, but with the Chitauri references and even Titus Welliver's character, who was not, I don't think he was in the movies, but he was in the Item 47 one-shot, which I actually covered on the show with our friend Esteban, actually. I like that there's, once again, these kind of tie-ins or nods to the film side of the universe. And we kind of talked last time when covering the first three, how this is just sort of a different pocket of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But there is still that thing that they're trying to do of, you know, it's still the fallout of the Battle of New York. And, you know, are there still mysterious things out there? We kind of saw that with the 084 in the last batch of episodes, and, you know, with the helmet of the Chitauri and things like that. We're still slowly picking up those pieces and still sort of expanding this universe that we've been seeing for so long.
I feel like that was a pretty good tie-in too, and they kind of took that and ran with it in Spider-Man Homecoming, where the Vulture kind of came from similar circumstances, where you have, you know, these firefighters who came in to clean up New York, firefighters not from New York. You know, obviously it's very reminiscent of what took place on 9/11. Firefighters from Wrigley, Pennsylvania, by the way, which apparently is a made-up place. Unless you know better than I do, Paul, you would be close to that area.
Not as far as I know. When he said Strawberry Festival, I was kind of intrigued because I know strawberries are a thing. Cherry Festival, cherry blossom time, is a huge thing in my area in particular, but I haven't heard of many strawberry festivals like that. But then again, we have Bacon Fest and everything else in this state, so who knows?
Oh, yeah, Bacon Fest. Yeah, I'm talking about.
Wrigley, Pennsylvania, though. I searched for it on Google Maps, and apparently not a real place. But yeah, having the fire department come in, and obviously Michael Keaton's character was hired to clean up, and the firefighters were there also helping with the cleanup, and they both got a little piece to take with them. Really good tie-in, honestly.
And I think it's very, I don't know if the word is telling or whatever, but it's very much like a thing of humans, right? That even all those years later, because like you said, Spider-Man Homecoming, that's several years after this point, and this is already like a year or so after the Battle of New York, the fact that people are still doing that. And I feel like, because this is basically supposed to be a heightened version of the real world, and I feel like people would still do that sort of stuff. You're going to have the people who they just want to have the item, and, you know, there's the people who they want to use it for what they think is good but is evil, or people who flat out want to use it for evil or whatever. And I'm not necessarily saying I agree with a government agency going in and swooping all of that stuff up, but I'm not saying that I agree with it just being out there, but that is a very human thing to do if it is out there, is just kind of take it and use it for your own personal gain.
Hell yeah. You don't think I would be up in the fucking streets with some alien tech? Oh yeah, bro. All my people would eat. What you talking about?
Ellsworth.
I'd be a little smarter than the Vulture, though, I'll tell you that.
No, he'd be the guy from item 47.
Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one.
That guy got Lizzie Kaplan, so.
You talk about tying people in. There's a cameo of the one agent that's on the ship when they go in, the Avengers go into the ship later on. That one bald agent, he's only in a cameo in one of the, it's either episode 4 or 5, Coulson's walking in and he's standing right there. Fuck, man, I can't think of his name. He's one of the agents that shows up later on in the Avengers movies, though. But it was like a quick cameo of him.
Are you talking about the guy who plays Sitwell?
Yes.
With the glasses?
Yes. There's like a little cameo of him in like 4 or 5. It's like he's just in the office. It's a quick cameo, but I saw it earlier, and I was like, there's that dude. Because Tony Stark points him out about, oh, shit, what's he doing there? He's a good agent. No, nobody knows what I'm talking about.
No, I know what you're talking about, but
I just thought
I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, so obviously they made him some kind of character later on. This was something where, like, it's literally a cameo. He doesn't even speak, but I took notice of it because it's obviously very early on where the character was introduced here.
You're talking in one of the episodes we watched, like 4 through 6?
Yes, I'm telling you.
I don't remember seeing him in one of these, but I mean, I wouldn't doubt it. I know he does show up.
He doesn't even speak. He's literally just in, like, It's when they go. I might be bored.
The only agent I can remember is the one in Hong Kong that they meet up with.
No, it's when they go. Fuck, man, I don't know.
Because there's the guy, like I said, there's the guy, because Sitwell we've seen in some of the one-shots already, and we do see him definitely later on in the film side to do with things with S.H.I.E.L.D. But like I said, the only one I really remember noticing this time was the guy, I don't remember what the name of the character is, but it's Titus Welliver. It's the guy who played the Man in Black on Lost.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, I know who he was, and he has a speaking role. I'm going to, again, I nodded off earlier, but I'm going to go back and I'm going to find it later and I'm going to let you guys know, because
you might have been dreaming if you were seeing Tony Stark, buddy.
No. Man, now you're just making stuff up. Okay. On to the next. My next point was I was a little disappointed in Sky's choice of men.
Okay, so fun fact that I had to double check this. So that guy, his name, the actor, his name is Austin Nichols. He was actually a main character in like the second half of a teen drama show that I used to watch on the CW. Yes. The two of them actually dated for like 3 years in real life, believe it or not.
That guy and Chloe Bennett?
Chloe Bennett, yeah.
Man, yeah. That just breaks my heart.
That guy used to date Sophia Bush from One Tree Hill was the show. She was on some of the Chicago PD fire shows like that. He used to date her too. He pulls it.
Don't any of these girls like bald bearded guys?
I
or pink haired bearded
Paul,
guys?
you say pink haired bearded guys?
That's me. Yeah, I have pink hair and I have a beard.
So really, they dated? That's cool.
I didn't know that, but yeah. It kind of makes sense because it was actually kind of weird to me to see her just in straight up bra and panties there for a minute in episode 5, I believe it was. Because that's not something she's, you know, normally doing in this show or otherwise that I've seen. So it was kind of weird to see. And if that's, you know, that was her real life boyfriend, that kind of makes it more believable that she would do something like that. Because I don't think we've seen anything like that since, you know, don't get your hopes up, Ellsworth. Sorry.
And May definitely knows something about Coulson. It's very obvious she's got secrets. She's hiding. I want to know more about her because I don't like that she got secrets. I don't like it.
You know,
I like Sky, the fact that she always wants to know what's going on. She like, fuck this Clarence thing. Like, we a team. I like that attitude. This keeping secrets from each other, compartmentalizing and stuff. I'm not about that life.
I could go with the kind of production thing or like the weird fan thing of like, yeah, but if there were no secrets, there would be no show, you know?
Yeah, no, I know. No, I know this.
I know, you know. No, but I believe, you know, Kevin can vouch for this. I used to joke about that sort of stuff on Lost with friends all the time. And I'm guilty of it myself where it's like, but why did this have to happen? And then I have to take a step back every once in a while to be like, well, I guess if there wasn't drama, there wouldn't be a show.
Yeah, I remember those early days of Lost with Friends, and Paul would be like, but why did this happen? Why did we not find this out until much later? I was like, well, then Paul, that wouldn't have been much of a show. If that was the case. that did happen quite a few times.
No, but I really am enjoying it. You know, I do know that I wasn't as intrigued early on as I am now. I get a little bit more character development. The only person I'm just kind of like is Ward. He's kind of just my aunt character. Like, I feel like I have no emotional attachment to that character whatsoever, and don't really like, I'm getting nothing.
That's because he doesn't have emotions, so that's okay.
You know, I mean, yeah, like right
some
now,
of my girlfriends
like,
have said the same thing.
I like the nerd duo right now, like Fitz and Simmons. Although I feel like it's one fucking name.
Well, you don't have to add the end. I don't think anybody ever adds the end in between.
Yeah, it's just Fitzsimmons. So,
Fitzsimmons? Yeah, like, those say it, like, but it found, I feel like somebody could have just that last name, Fitzsimmons.
And you said what you said earlier about, you know, you were disappointed in Sky's taste in men. Minor spoiler here, but don't worry, there are more to come. This is just her first love interest. There's a lot.
Oh, good. So I get to get heartbroken over and over again.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Like even in the beginning of episode 6, Fitz was being a little flirty with Sky, which I thought was weird.
Yeah. Right.
And even like there's some weird kind of tension between her and Coulson at times. They're really kind of teasing, like, okay, which one of these guys is going to make a move on her? You know.
I mean, I would.
We know.
I've only just talked with you these few times, and even I know that.
I mean, I'd be a gentleman about it.
Of course. Me personally, I loved to see the introduction of Raina, the girl in the flower dress, is one of my favorite characters on this show overall. So I love seeing her jump in there that early. I kind of forgot when she got introduced. I know she's kind of in and out. She shows up in 5. She's not in 6. Ellsworth has probably seen a little more of her, I would assume, if he jumped ahead just a little bit. But yeah, she was always one of my favorites.
And it was a similar thing to what we talked about last time with, you know, I didn't remember, like we said about Mike Peterson, you know, like I didn't remember that she debuted this early on, because much like yourself, Kevin, and not to give too much away, but like as soon as I saw her, I remembered a lot of, you know what I'm talking about. But you know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, like it was this early that this happened too. You know what I mean? And like I said before, maybe it's just because of the binging aspect, or maybe it's because I know what's to come, but I personally, and I understand what you guys are saying, where maybe the certain things are a little too slow, but like I said, to me, maybe it's because I know where it's all going, but I didn't necessarily think that these are going a little too slow.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know this for sure, but if I wanted to make a comparison between her and another character on a show, I would say maybe Michael Emerson on Lost. Maybe she wasn't supposed to stick around the way she did.
Because, and it definitely seems, I would say that's a good comparison, because in the episode that she was in, the woman that played the doctor from the pilot was in there as well. And I would have thought that she would be the one, because she was doing the experiments, like the centipede things, like she was there with Mike, and now she's there doing stuff with Scorch and whatever. And I would have thought she would be probably the recurring character.
They gave him a name.
So, okay, and I got to ask you guys. You guys are bigger comic people than me. Is that like a comic character that I'm not thinking of?
Yes and no. They do this from time to time on this show where they will name a character one of the characters from the comics, but there's really no correlation whatsoever. Like, there was a Scorch in Marvel Comics. He's a mutant that was in the X-Men storyline, Days of Future Past. I believe that was his only storyline back in the 80s, and he hasn't appeared since. So that Scorch and this Scorch really don't share much in common, aside from they just have random powers.
They introduce random powers.
Yeah. They can't call them mutants, obviously. Maybe they could now, but they couldn't then.
Right.
And they do kind of rectify that problem, but I don't think that down the line in this show they do explain some things away. But I don't think that's the case here. That this was just kind of a random freak occurrence, I guess.
Yeah, I think I know exactly what you're talking about, and I'm trying to word it in my head to not give too much away, but I think they do try to go back and sort of retcon this to fit in with that later on, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh. But there's a process that one has to go through that I don't think happened here. At least we weren't privy to it if it did.
Right. Which actually, yeah. Okay, so talking about the Scorch character, and I said before about like, oh, I wouldn't want a government agency to swoop in and whatever. What do we think about the fact that they're basically S.H.I.E.L.D. is sort of tracking people, and whether it's powered people or just persons of interest or whatever?
Well, again, this is a big worry with people right now as well, thinking that they're going to be microchipped, forced microchipped, and tracked by the government or whatever. And to that I say the same thing that Coulson said in episode 4, in that this is getting easier every day. People are surveilling themselves. Like, I think damn near everybody we know has a smartphone, probably an iPhone, probably with iCloud, and it has a location device in it. It has a microphone in it. It has a camera on both sides of it. So if somebody wants to surveil you, don't worry about a possible implant with a microchip.
They got you.
About what you're carrying in your pocket and your hand 24 hours a day.
And that's, I joked about something the other day. I said something out loud, and I said how I was going to start seeing advertisements for it, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and whatever, because that's another thing that they do, because they, you know, these apps always ask for, you know, access to your microphone or your camera or whatever. And theoretically, it's so that as soon as you can, you know, you click to dictate something or take a picture, it doesn't have to load up your camera. But by doing that, you do give them access to everything. And I think that was very well put by Coulson, that that is exactly what's happening, for better or worse.
I mean, I've done it. I'll let you get to your thoughts in a second, Ellsworth. But just speaking personally, I have, you know, been, let's say I'm at an event or I'm somewhere in public, and the whatever I'm at has a hashtag associated with it. You know, when you click and search that hashtag and you start looking through pictures on Instagram or whatever, you'd be like, oh, there was that person I saw. Let me check out their profile. You open their profile and that leads you to another person, their friend that they were with. That person, like, it's not hard to do. Like, people call it stalking or whatever. That's far from stalking when you're making all of your stuff just out there publicly anyway.
I've absolutely done that. The only bad thing is when you go to like a random person's neighbor's second cousin and then randomly like a picture. That's where you have to, that's where you start to freak out.
It happens to the best of us.
When you're 48 weeks deep into the fucking pictures, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And because you're not thinking, because by now there. You think you know those people.
Oh, no, but what I was going to say is that is a very gray area. Because as someone who is anti, I don't want to be chipped or anything like that, at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily want to know that people with that kind of ability are running around and someone doesn't have an eye on them. So it's a very gray area.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it becomes part of civil war, you know?
Right. And I mean, it does. I get it infringes on things, but you also are no longer like, at what point do you have to start making, again, it goes to some new laws because people are not people anymore.
And I mean, it's not too much of the same thing, but Kev, you might remember when we were talking about the Avengers, one of the like little trivia things on IMDb said how, I think it was not branches of the military, but I think it was like one of the government agencies, like the FBI or CIA or something, didn't consult on the movie because they weren't quite sure whether S.H.I.E.L.D. was an international organization or an organization that reports to the U.S. government or whatever. And because there was sort of a gray area, they didn't want to be involved. And I feel like even now, these six episodes into the television program, we're still kind of seeing a bit of that ambiguity where do they report to the U.S. government? Do they report to the, you know, like the U.N. or whatever? And I feel like we don't always get a clear image on that. I feel like they kind of operate sort of outside of all of that stuff. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just feel like that's kind of how they portray it all the time.
Yeah, I think our reality here has S.H.I.E.L.D. reporting to, I believe it's the World Security Council, who, you know, Nick Fury's talking to them, and they're the ones who want to launch the nuke at New York. that technically is what's over them, but obviously things are going to change here in the next, what, 10 episodes or so?
Yeah, I mean, it's very obvious that things are changing.
Yeah. It's not a spoiler to say Ellsworth has seen Winter Soldier. We know that S.H.I.E.L.D. is not going to carry on as it was. So it's maybe it's that going in.
What?
What? Well, and that's okay. So S.H.I.E.L.D.? Again, not getting too spoilery, but I think that's, and I think I said it last time, that's kind of one of the things with the whole, you know, slowness of these first few and sort of building certain things with S.H.I.E.L.D. is they had that. Right. They knew that. And even now, Kevin, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. Going back and watching some of these early ones, you kind of chuckle at certain things that are said or certain looks that are exchanged or whatever, knowing what we know.
One line specifically in episode 4 that I very much took notice of and was like, oh,
yeah,
yeah.
I had the same exact reaction. And it's just one of those things where, you know, obviously the writers knew, but they couldn't exactly tell us just yet. But, you know, that's part of the sort of downfall of something like this, I suppose.
Something else I noticed in episode 4, there were, and now, as you know, Paul, we've talked about this before on Lost with Friends. When I'm rewatching like this, I will watch with the closed captions on just to see if we pick up any information. You know, here, there.
Oh, that did might you send you included. The snap too?
Yeah.
Yeah, I Snapchatted both these guys earlier with what I'm about to mention. I guess they base the closed captioning off the script and kind of just put it in there. And in edits, sometimes they may remove lines of dialogue, but there are lines of dialogue that remain in the script that are not said on screen. And they show up in the closed captioning. And I just found that very funny and strange. And I think they changed numbers. Whether it was the guys in the red mask carrying the briefcase, I forget if they said there were 25 or 55 of them. I believe they said 55. But in the captions, it showed up 25.
Yeah, I don't
know. On screen, it looked like more than 25.
Yeah, I believe they were saying 55, but it was showing up as 25 each time they would mention that, 25, 25. So just little funny notes that I notice.
And that's, I would have never, unless I was looking on like a trivia thing or whatever, I would have never noticed that until you sent me that snap earlier today.
Well, I watch everything with the captions on, so, but I never realized they didn't speak. I wasn't even paying attention to it. I was probably too busy reading the caption.
Yeah, they didn't even say it. I got to say, even just 6 episodes in, they've really spanned the globe on this show. And
oh, my God.
You know they're not really in the locate. They're not really in Hong Kong. They're not really in Peru, I think it was the first time. They're not really in Belarus.
The desert?
Yeah, they're not really in wherever the sandboxes. There's a lot of CG and a lot of set building going on. But could you imagine, Paul, if you were a huge fan of this show, the way that we kind of are for Lost, where we have gone to conventions and gone to filming locations, like you would have to be a goddamn millionaire to get from place to place to go everywhere they go in this show. Like it would be an amazing experience. Don't get me wrong, but you would go literally all around the world.
Well, as you started to speak, I was going to say how, like, and it was something we've talked about many times on Lost with Friends, and we've just talked about even off mic, because as many conversations as we had on that show, we've probably had the exact same number of conversations with all of our friends off mic. And, you know, the fact that they make all of these different places out of, I would assume, I don't know where they filmed the show. I don't know if it was in California or, you know, Vancouver or whatever, but they do a really good job with the set dressing. And it was something we often talked about with regards to Lost, because except for like 4 scenes, everything there was shot in Hawaii. And, you know, our friend Steve has put together a very comprehensive list of every filming location for every single thing.
Very
but I feel like the set people did a fantastic job of this. And I think in the previous time we covered the first three, I mentioned that the network ABC said that this was going to be sort of on the same budgetary scale as a Once Upon a Time with regards to CG and things like that. And I think just in redressing everything, because obviously Once Upon a Time, if you don't know, they used a lot of CG just to like create the places, you know, they go to Wonderland and they go to Neverland and they go to, you know, various
best
fairy
spin
tale.
On Peter Pan ever.
I don't disagree. Peter Pan is one of my favorite stories.
Best spin ever. I fucking loved it. Sorry, continue.
But they did a lot with CG and set dressing on that show. And I feel like the set dressing and costume people on here do a fantastic job as well to make everything look like wherever it's supposed to be. And I don't know, I've never been to Belarus or, you know, Hong Kong or anything like that, but I look at it, and granted it may just be because they're telling me that, but based off of things I see, I go, yeah, all right, I believe that's Hong Kong.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do too. I mean, they did a really fantastic job. I believe they were in the Arctic, or when they were in the Arctic, weren't they in the Arctic at one point? Or is that another episode? See, I don't know anymore. This is why I didn't want to skip ahead.
Yeah, see. I'm sure it happens.
Because shit starts to blend together. But no, overall, as someone, again, who's first watched the show, I definitely say that I'm way more into it now, a few more episodes in. It got me wanting to, I want to see how things play out. Like at this point, I would, for no other reason than to see how everything concludes, I would continue to watch the show. But I do genuinely like it as a Marvel fan and someone who, you know, repeatedly watches Marvel movies every day of his life. I mean, I did. I watched Ant-Man this morning. Like I watch stuff repeatedly all the time. I'm glad to watch this show so that I can tie this in with everything else, since it does tie into the overall universe.
And one of the things I think this show does really well, now obviously we've said it many times, they're still setting up all of the characters and things like that. And like we said, they reference the Civil War storyline, and they're still playing with the Extremis storyline a bit. And they do sort of do nods or crossovers with the film side of the universe. And even Kevin said when they'll have little references to people or things in the comics. But one of the things I think that this show does very well, I would say kind of starting in season two for sure, but you start to see it kind of in the second half of season one, is they'll take specific arcs, whether, because, you know, we've seen already in the films, you know, because I've been talking about the different films, and then, you know, leading up to this, we've covered all of phase one and things like that, but we've seen how they'll take certain storylines from the comics and, you know, add things to them or combine them with another storyline or whatever to create the movie. You know, and, you know, each movie has its own specific story, beginning, middle, end, whatever. And obviously with the TV format, you can, you know, spread out a particular story for more episodes or whatever. But I definitely feel like the series does a very good job of taking some of those comic book storylines you may not be as familiar with. Like Civil War, when that happened in the comics, that was a very big deal. That crossed over into the mainstream where, you know, it was going to be sort of every Marvel hero going against each other sort of thing. And it became, you know, multiple books, and it spanned like a year, I think, or something like that. And there were so many spinoffs and so many this or whatever. And then they took it and they made it into a movie. Not a bad movie by any stretch, but it was a movie. And but they take certain things for this show, and they'll be able to stretch it out and tell the story a bit longer. And the show itself starts to tell its own arcs and its own takes on a lot of the comic book stories. You guys in particular, I'm talking to Ellsworth and Kevin and anybody else out there who's more familiar with the comics, they do start to take on sort of stories that you guys may be more familiar with. They'll have their own little spin because it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but they do start to have their, you know, stories that you might know and be familiar with, but they'll have their own little spin on them. And that's one of the things that I definitely like about this show.
Well, I mean, you get, and this is what you've seen, you know, and we will see going forward, obviously, for you, you know, whole series of Daredevil, of Jessica Jones, of Luke Cage, Iron Fist, what have you, Punisher. There are so many stories that you could pick from. And even if you don't use the entire storyline, you have 80 years worth of comics now at this point to dive in. And that allows you to build seasons long story arcs, as we've seen on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the other Netflix shows. And hopefully we'll see again here in the near future. And specific to these just few episodes that we watched, they plant a lot of seeds. They talk to you about the clairvoyant. You know, they just mention that once and throw it away, and it's not mentioned the next week at all. You know, but we know it's coming. They snap a picture of what they said are some possible alien equations on a chalkboard, and then don't hear anything about it for the next couple episodes, at least. Slight spoiler, becomes important. You know, so they're throwing a lot at you that you may not even recognize as important at the time. And you could just build seasons and seasons of television, taking from thousands of comics that thousands of writers have contributed to over a very long period of time.
And I said this, I believe I said this, you know, when we covered the first three, but it is almost like, I said how the show was sort of as, you know, an advertisement for your film series, right? It's like a weekly, you know, almost commercial for, hey, if you like this, imagine, you know, bigger budget, bigger screen, you know, cinematic experience sort of thing. And like, Kev, you were on at least one episode with my mother, who is not a big comic book fan, but she loves the movies and she likes the, you know, some of the TV series and stuff. And I'm kind of in the middle where I know the comic book stories. I haven't necessarily read every page of everything. I'll read a lot of summaries and things like that. But she is always interested in hearing, you know, when I'll sort of either explain something afterwards or, you know, read it from, you know, Wikipedia or, you know, a comic book website or something like that, where I feel like this is very much, this does sort of the same thing where you wonder, like I wondered Scorch. I didn't look it up because I knew you guys would know, but I could have easily looked it up and then had the thing of like, oh, that was a comic book character. So that's what that was in reference to. Every time they reference something, like, you know, like case number 616 or something, I perk up a little because I know Earth 616 is where, you know, the Marvel Comics world takes place or, you know, whatever. So like there's those little things that if you want to look deeper, they are there, and they are almost, like I said, sort of an advertisement so that you can go and read the comics if you want, as much as they are that you could go and see the films, I think.
And I'm sure that was the idea. You know, anytime you see one of the creators promote something on their social media and what have you, you know, they'll say, if you enjoyed this, don't forget, these are based on, you know, comic books. Like these were written and drawn characters first before they, maybe not so much with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That is the one thing they went in reverse. But for everything else, yes, absolutely, you're right.
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either. Like you just said, like with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. sort of, you know, the Coulson character was created for the films and they've since used him and even Clark Gregg in particular to appear in other media. Because realistically, I know this is a Marvel podcast, but that's how a lot of DC things came to be. You know, Mr. Freeze's wife was and like Harley Quinn and things like that. They were from the Batman animated series. They became huge things in, you know, other forms of media and stuff. And maybe not to the same extent because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't looked upon as highly as it should be, in my opinion, at least. But I think the fact that some of these characters, whether it be Coulson or, you know, I believe May and several others have sort of crossed over into the cartoons or the comic books or whatever, I think that's sort of indicative of how much the characters in the show have had an impact, at least on, even if it's just that sort of niche audience that they have.
And it would be even more so had they properly promoted it here in the past, I'm going to say 3 years or so.
Yeah.
as of the time of recording, which, you know, I feel like the promotion did kind of die off at one point, and it allowed the show to become, you know, something else entirely. It just went outside of everything to do its own thing, and it was just as good doing that. But yeah, at some point, I feel like this was all very relevant to the time of the episodes that we're reviewing. It just didn't last, unfortunately.
I feel like what you said was sort of how I compared this show to Fringe, you know, where it starts a little slow, then it really starts to build and whatever. And for anybody who doesn't know about that show, after a certain point, they kind of stopped doing case of the week sort of thing. And it basically became, they realized they have their audience. We're not going to keep this show going forever. We're going to, you know, end it maybe 2 years from now or whatever. But they didn't, that network was Fox. They didn't necessarily try to build a new audience. They kind of went, okay, we have this audience. Let's just sort of play to them. And I'm not saying that's what ABC did with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I definitely think that they kind of dropped the ball a bit on promoting it. And it definitely has to do with the fact that the film division allegedly didn't like this TV show existing, but, you know, that's what it is.
Always got to be careful with Fox, man. Always. Yeah. I don't just say that for political reasons. I don't just say it. Fox has canceled numerous shows that I've gotten into over the years. Very abruptly. So Ellsworth knows this. I've talked to him about it before. He's like, oh, you got to check out this show. What channel is it on? It's on Fox. I was like, all right, maybe if it gets to season three.
Being the Joss Whedon guy, should I bring up Firefly at this point? I mean, that's like the go-to one that Fox canceled way too early after one season.
There you go.
Way too early.
Ellsworth, a lot of...
Fringe was good.
Oh, definitely. Probably one of my favorite shows.
So you comparing the two makes me feel even better because, yes, it is also one of my favorite shows, too. So that makes me feel even better about this whole endeavor into the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, speaking of that, so like you said it last time and you kind of told us before we started recording here that you've been writing down notes. Is there anything that we haven't covered in your episodes 4 through 6 notes? I know we're kind of jumping around and we're not necessarily, I didn't really give the full recap on the episodes or anything like I did last time, but is there anything that we haven't covered that you have in your notes?
So I'm just glancing, not anything that I see. I mean, we talked about everything. I mean, we did. We brought up all the mystery, the throwaway lines, like you guys said about the clairvoyant, that's going to be important. I already feel like that just because it was mentioned and in the text and the way it was mentioned. We talked about, you know, having powers. Yeah, I mean, we covered everything, I mean, for the most part. Talked about Coulson, his backstory. Yeah.
The one thing that I have notes-wise is that in episode 6, we get our first great Fitzsimmons moment when Fitz grabs the case that has the Chitauri helmet in it, breaks into the lab, and says, "Now I'm with you."
Like, we're gonna do like we always do. We're gonna figure it out together.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, got me.
Yeah. There are many moments like that to come. But that is the first of many great Fitzsimmons moments for me. I'm such a mark for both of them.
I feel even better because, again, like I said earlier, I'm 6 did it for me. Like you said, like we got the moment. I was not sure about them until now. And that, like, that moment, it is that exact moment. Like, I got all, like, hair stood up. I got all like choked up a little bit and was like, wow, man, like that's my dude. Like I can like this guy. I love this guy. I want to see these two. I want to see their relationship. I want to know about it. Their relationship is very deep. I don't even know if they understand what their relationship is. Is it a brother sister thing? Is there a love thing there? I don't know there. I don't know. Well, what is their background? I don't know, but I love it.
And they're very confused about it themselves.
But like you said, you've seen flirtation or like little awkward moments with other people on the bus. already. So, you know, it is. What is their relationship? There is something there. But at the same time, like you said, man, that moment, he just, boom, right in. No hesitation. If you're going, I'm going, or we're figuring it out together.
Love it.
Now I'm hyped up again.
And I definitely feel like these are the right things that, you know, we should be feeling, right? Is like, and we even talked about it a little bit ago, more towards the beginning, how not all of the episodes, but we are getting little bits of the characters throughout these ones. Like we even said, like Fizzed has, you know, it's more focused on Fitzsimmons, you know, and it's like, I believe Kev, you said it, like Sky is more of like a secondary character in that episode, you know, like the first few kind of focused a bit more on Coulson and, you know, whatever. And I think that that's something that we got the good introduction so far with the, you know, the first few episodes, but like these, now we're starting to go into who are these other characters that are aboard this, the bus, you know, as it were.
I think, as you're saying, well, morality was that, like, that episode's overall, because you had Coulson and the firefighter, you know, having that moment and dealing with that, and then we cut to Fitzsimmons and them dealing with that issue. Like, there was a lot of emotion in that episode because you have a lot of, you're talking about a bunch of stuff that morality plays a part, like.
And we could use a real life Simmons right about now.
Yeah, right.
Give me all the Yupai serum.
But I feel like Ellsworth, I think with your notes and sort of the questions you're asking, and I think that you're I mean, obviously, you're a bit ahead of this. Like we said, you're a few episodes ahead of this already. But I feel like these are very much sort of the right questions to be asking and the right feelings to be having at this point. Because we don't know too much, but we know enough to know that we like these people and want to know more about them.
Yeah. Last note. Oh, my God. Speaking of that episode, I was talking about earlier, because I don't, the one note that I didn't miss, I was talking about how Ward doesn't really have any emotion, but in this episode, you see him get confused because he can't protect his team because it's an enemy he can't fight. So for the first time, you see something out of him. Mm. And you see he wants to protect his team and he doesn't know how because he can't fight it. So you see that little moment. So that, again, that whole episode had a lot of emotion for various characters, and I, like, that was the one other thing that I took a note of, is that I saw, like, again, I don't really have any feeling towards Ward, I haven't really seen much for him, but in that moment I saw him, you know, I saw him be confused or conflicted, however he did not look happy.
Yeah, I would say that episode 6 was the best episode so far, as far as ones we reviewed. And, Paul, because you and the fans demanded it, you know who we can credit for that episode?
Go for it.
Episode 6 aired November 5th, 2013, written by Paul Bzuski, his first of 11 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He also wrote 6 and produced 32 episodes of Lost, including
Sundown. I was going to say, that should be a name you recognize.
Including Sundown, Paul, because we covered that on Lost with Friends together.
Then we didn't know how to pronounce his last name, because I'm still unsure on this one.
I haven't learned anything. he is also going to be the showrunner for Marvel's Hellstrom, which is coming to Hulu at some point in the near future. And he got that job after Marvel's Most Wanted got scrapped. That episode was also directed by Vincent Misiano, his first of 11 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He has directed at least one episode of more than 40 other television series, including The West Wing, Law and Order, and Agent Carter.
I'm looking at it here, and I'm just looking at the credits for the other two episodes.
I got those too.
All right.
We'll go backwards. We'll go backwards. Episode 5, Girl in the Flower Dress, aired October 22nd, 2013, written by Brent Fletcher, his first of 14 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He also wrote the Spartacus TV series and the episode of Lost Numbers.
Oh.
Directed by Jesse Bochco. I'm probably not saying that right. His first of 12 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Most notably worked on NYPD Blue, as well as Prison Break and Grey's Anatomy.
Another good show.
I know you like those, both of you.
I'm assuming not the same show, though.
Right, correct. I threw them in there, you know, for you two, respectively.
Thank you.
Episode 4, I Spy, aired October 15th, 2013, written by one of the executive producers of the show, Jeffrey Bell, his second of 8 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes that he wrote. He also wrote for The X-Files, Angel, and Alias, which I know Paul is a big fan of most of those. The show was directed by, or the episode was directed by Roxanne Dawson, her first of 3 times directing on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She's a former TV actor, most notably on Star Trek Voyager, and she also directed many TV episodes, including a return to the MCU later on for her in Runaways, and also an episode of Lost, The Long Con.
Ooh, The Long Con.
Yes. So a lot of crossing the streams going on, as you mentioned earlier, Ellsworth, between this show and one of our other favorite shows. Several of our other favorite shows, really.
I'm 99% sure Brent Fletcher, I talked last time about how Jeff Bell, and you even said, you know, Angel and things like that. That's how he started kind of working with Joss Whedon. Jed Whedon and Marissa Tancarone became the showrunners. I believe Jeff Bell was going to also work on the Most Wanted pilot, and there was another spinoff of this show at one point that he was supposed to be involved with. But Brent Fletcher, I believe, started out as Joss Whedon's like assistant or something working on Angel, and then kind of, because that's how a lot of people, from my understanding, get started. You know, you work as an assistant or whatever. But I believe he was Joss Whedon's assistant back during the days of Angel and got one of his first writing credits working for that show as well. So he's kind of as much as, you know, Lost and the various other things, that's kind of how he got his start, was very early on with Joss in his career.
It always amazes me when you dive into, like, the credits and see how many people have their hands in the pot here. For a network TV show, it's insane when you actually watch those credits that air at the end of every show, because a lot of those names aren't the same on every episode, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a team, though, man. That's what I love about film.
That's one of the things I think that, like, our English friends don't quite grasp. I think some of them do, but I think some of them don't, because over there you have like 3 people who work and do most aspects of everything, write and direct and produce and star. But that's also why you only get 6 episodes every 3 years of a show.
I like how you read the credits off, Kev. I like that, because it shows me that a lot of the shows I like have the same people working on them, so it makes sense why I like the same shit.
Well, these are, you know, a lot of ABC shows involved, so I assume ABC kind of has their own family of writers, directors, producers, et cetera, that they kind of stay within for the most part. And, you know, the showrunners, too, obviously. Paul has said many times, you know, the Whedons have their crew.
Well, actually, so I can kind of reference that, like we were referencing like the Fox network earlier, and another Joss Whedon show, Dollhouse, which lasted 2 seasons, because the president of Fox actually said, I knew I couldn't cancel it after 1 because of Firefly. It was a completely different guy. It was like 10 years later, but he flat out said he only gave the show he gave the show a season 2 just because he didn't want to have more backlash. But about halfway through one of the seasons on that show, the network, I believe, took almost all of the writers and moved them over to the show Lie to Me, because they thought that was the better show to go with. So they wanted the better writers to be on that show than the Dollhouse show. So they very much do what you were talking about, Kev, which is they kind of, a lot of them have their own sort of, I mean, as much as they could have their own crew of, I want to work with this person, that person, whatever, it's very much sort of the network says, we have a deal with this person, we're going to put them on your writing staff.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But do we have anything else we want to sort of talk about? Episodes 4 through 6 of...
I'm good. You guys good? I'm good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking to you guys. I loved it, man. We could go all night, Paul.
I mean, well, all right. So I'm going to say it here.
It's only 9:30 for me, so...
Well, I'm going to say it here. I'm going to once again, not to try to put you guys on the spot, but I'm going to once again extend it so that if we want to come back and cover the next few as well, we can. Obviously, you know, different schedules. We're not quite sure when that's going to be. If you guys want to, I'm not saying you have to, but the invite is there. We can talk off mic about that. But in the meantime, if they want to get in touch with you guys, where can they do that all across the internet?
I am at Seventh Power, spell it out, replace the V with the number 7, across all forms of social media.
I am at The Magician, THEMAJISHN, at Twitter, and I'm Ellsworth Certified on IG.
For me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JPGRB. You can follow my secondary Instagram at JPCS.PICS. I try to take at least one picture a day of things I'm doing. A lot of food stuff going on there, and my personal thoughts and feelings on things going on in my life as well. For all clock shelves related things on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, it's at Clock Shelves. That's CLOCKSHELVES. Again, that's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you want to support, patreon.com/clockshelves. Once again, CLOCKSHELVES. And the central hub for everything, where you can hear all past episodes, get more information about everybody involved with all things that we do, it's clockshelves.com, CLOCKSHELVES.COM. All right, thank you guys for joining me once again to talk about season 1 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're slowly chipping away, getting to... what I think is a better second half. But like I said, I do definitely like this first half, and I'm glad you guys are enjoying it on your first and second watch throughs with Ellsworth and Kevin, respectively. And I hope all of you guys that are listening enjoy as well. And so until next time, I will say thanks for listening, true believers.